Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Russ Avison right here on LA Talk Radio.
I can whistle.
Oh. Well, at any rate, this is LA Talk Radio, and you are listening to The Writer's Block. I am your host, Jim Christina, and on the phone with my very good friend, dog trainer, and best guy in the world, Russ Avison.
Boy, you got that nailed.
I did, didn't I? Well, I've had lots of practice because I missed you last week.
I know. But I'm glad to be back, and still I'm day 10 of quarantine.
You had a little mishap in France, didn't you?
Yeah, this should be our COVID-19 special show.
Well, actually, that's what I was going to get to here in just a minute. But we're glad to have you back with us, Russ.
It's glad. Listen, it's good to be anywhere at this point.
And I'm telling you, we have a fascinating guest with us tonight. And before we get started with that, this is a word for all of you that are on furlough or plain staying home because of the coronavirus. We appreciate you listening to our show, and we realize you have a lot of other options, so thank you very much. We also hope, the whole crew of the Writer's Block, that is, that things get back to normal fairly soon, and we're all hurting, and that is the absolute God's truth. Again, thank you so much for listening, and hang in there, it will get better. So, that goes for you too, Russ.
Thank you. Thank you.
And to our guest as well, and to Ronan. Okay. You know what? We're going to get right into this guy because he's like fascinating, don't you think?
Oh, after reading the book, I can't imagine.
Well, he's an award-winning author. He writes novels, comic books, short stories, screenplays, and more. He is a member of the International Association of Media Tie-In Writers and International Thriller Writers. On occasion, he appears in movies and TV shows, usually standing behind your favorite actor. For more information on Mr. Bobby Nash and his work, please visit him at www.bobbynash.com. So please welcome to the Writer's Block, Mr. Bobby Nash.
Thank you so much for having me, guys.
There we go.
You are? You know, you fill out a thing when you come on the show, and you listed down here your genres, and I have to read this because it's quite clever. Thriller, suspense, crime, action, adventure, horror, sci-fi, and a mixture of each.
Yes, I do love mixing my genres. Yes, yeah, lots of fun doing that.
And your metaphors, apparently.
And my yes.
So anyway, we you and I had spoke a little bit on Tuesday night, and I got a little bit of information out of you, but you're into a new series, the Snow series.
Yes.
Featuring Mr. Abraham Snow. Why don't you give us a little bit about your latest Snow novel and kind of give us an idea of what it's like. I really don't want to get too deep into it because there's a lot of twists and turns and there's a lot of stuff you can give away inadvertently. So I'll let you pick and choose where you want to go with it.
Okay. Oh, excuse me. Sorry, I'm coming to you from the pollen-covered state of Georgia. So you'll forgive the
like
occasional little Snow is an action thriller series that is kind of my love letter to the cop and PI shows and books of the 70s and 80s. Think Magnum PI or Rockford Files, and that gives you a gist of the type of stories we're telling. Lots of, you know, fist fights and car chases and all that fun stuff. And each book is a standalone story. They're novellas. We released novellas, and each story has a standalone A plot, but series one is a 6-issue big story. 6 books will give you the big story if you read all of them, but you can read each one individually and just get a story. As of right now, 4 of the books are out. Number 5 comes out the first week in April and number 6 sometime this summer. So, they're a lot of fun. Snow is a very, he's, like I said, he's a very cool character, and he, a lot of action and chases and fights and things like that. So, cool characters to play with.
Yeah, he is. And you know, I have to say, the only information I'm going to give away, it comes at the front part of this book when he's telling his grandfather that, he's done, he's retired. He's done playing the game.
Right.
And, he should have probably stuck to that.
Right. Well, you know how it is too. Anytime somebody in that, you know, they're like, "Yep, okay, I'm retired, I'm done." You know, that's not good. You know, it's like the universe goes, "Oh yeah."
Well, it's almost like he felt like he had to say that to his grandfather, because his grandfather handed him a keys to a very nice car.
And the car is one of those things. I mean, if you look at a lot of the PIs of the 70s right. and 80s, they all drove cool cars. You
That's
know?
Right.
Cars that realistically none of them should have been able to afford. So, yeah. And so we love playing with the car. And yes, in one of the later books, the car does get a little damaged. And I did hear from some people who were car guys who were like, you know. So... But the beauty of the way that I've set the books up is I can tell different types of stories in each book. Like, one of them can be a straight up action adventure. One of them can be more of a thriller. Book five is a murder mystery.
Uh-huh.
So I can play with different genres in the genre that I'm in, and I can pull in other things just to keep it so it's a unique kind of plot for each story.
Well, and you also throw humor in there too, which makes it a very readable story. And I'm sure Russ will admit, go along with that, because you were telling me how you really enjoyed his writing.
Well, I do. Unfortunately, I didn't read the Snow series. I read Suicide Bomb.
Oh!
But I have to tell you something. Oh, listen, it was, well, to give you an idea, I read it all in one day. It was a page turner for sure. But what I wanted to say about it is that from the first page, not only did it suck me into the story, but and I don't know if it's just a connection I have with your type of writing, but I was there. I saw every scene in vivid detail, and I don't know why that doesn't happen a lot. I mean, books are a lot about your imagination, but this particular one just grabbed me. I could see every scene so vividly. It was great. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Oh, thank you. That one was one that there's a nice little backstory with the Suicide Bomb book. I actually started it like 11 years ago, and it's one of those that I kept having to set it down and put it aside for like other gigs for publishers. And it was frustrating me that I was not making time to finish the novel. So a couple of years ago, I got this plan. I started releasing it to my patrons on my Patreon page, a chapter a week. And that motivated me to finish it. And, you know, because now it had a deadline. And so it stopped getting pushed to the side. And I'm glad too, because I love those characters. And
Well, I was going to say, what was really interesting too, I noticed that really, your two key protagonists were both very strong women, which I liked, because you don't see that a lot. First of all, I was going to ask you why did you pick women to be strong in this and to be the lead characters?
Because they are looking at your wife.
Oh, I know that.
Well, when I was writing it, I had already written Evil Ways and Deadly Games, and Evil Ways and Deadly Games each features, I like having multiple protagonists because I like having them play off each other. Right. In Evil Ways, the two main protagonists are brothers. So you've got two men there. And then in Deadly Games, there's a cop and a reporter that are put together. So when I was putting together Suicide Bomb, I was looking for a different, I didn't want to just do another two guys get into trouble, because then that could be the, you know, I could write that book with the characters I'd already created. Mm-hmm. And so as I was trying to come up with the characters, it was just, you know, I knew I wanted to have two female characters in the lead. And then it was just a matter of getting the characters created and getting to know the characters. Mm-hmm. And then once I knew the characters, then the story was able to flow around them, because, you know, as you guys know, when you can, once you know your characters, the character will inform story, because certain characters will, once you know them, will do things one way and not the other.
Right.
You know, they'll let you know, this is how I do things.
Right.
And I come in, I found out this, there was this nice thing that happened in the writing of the characters. Because when I did Evil Ways and Deadly Games, those characters were at odds. The two protagonists were at odds with each other before coming together to solve the problem. And Suicide Bomb, when the characters meet, they don't butt heads like that. Actually, they quite naturally just gravitated to one another.
Yeah, they bonded right away.
Well, exactly. And it was one of those things where it was just, once I knew the characters just felt like that was the way to go. And I think the friendship between the two of them evolves pretty quickly, but it also evolves very naturally. I didn't want it to feel forced.
I did notice though that you did give a little tip of the hat to a buddy movie, because in the beginning they're watch, I think on the TV is Lethal Weapon.
Yeah.
So I remember that, but the idea for the story, it reminded me a little bit of Manchurian Candidate.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, just, and I was wondering, was there any influence in this from that book, or was this just something that sprung on its own?
It more sprung on its own. I mean, I recognized that there were elements of story that were similar, you know, especially with the whole thing of someone being able to control other people.
Right.
Really, probably more. There was probably more influence from old pulp villains than anything else, because you know you always had these pulp villains that were, you know, mustache twirling, hand reeling. You know, I'm going to control. You know, and so the villain kind of has that feel to him, and then I lucked up too, because the villain's voice. I found the villain's voice really quickly, because a friend of mine said, I want to be in one of your books. And so I made the villain a friend of mine.
Uh-huh.
So that suddenly gave me a personality to work with.
Gotcha. So you have a friend that's really that cold blooded?
No, not really. But I just put input his personality, which is very nice, friendly, outgoing. And I thought, man, what's more evil than a guy that on the surface looks very nice, friendly, and outgoing?
Right.
But on the inside, he can do all of this stuff. So yeah, so that was fun. Yeah. Plus, I like the mystery of it too.
Here we go. Let's continue this in just a minute. But right now, we have to have a real quick word for LA Talk Radio. Hey, J. Michael here for LA Talk Radio. And if you're like me and you love talk radio, but you just can't find anything on that pesky little AM dial, then how about this? How about you tune into LA Talk Radio? You see, LA Talk Radio is a .com, and they have it all, from music to sports to self-help, but they even have talk. So why don't you sit back in your favorite chair, put your feet up, tune into LATalkRadio.com, and give us a listen. Guaranteed to be fun for you, and we're coming at you right now. And we're back in the studio. It is now 12 minutes after 7 p.m. on Pacific time. And we are talking with our guest author tonight, Mr. Bobby Nash. And we're on the air with Russ Avison and myself. And we were talking about characters. And, actually, Russ brought up the fact of buddy movies. And I mm-hmm. that's something I wanted to ask Bobby here. I write, a couple novels, like 15. But I have like 8 certain novels that I have dual protagonists, much like yourself. They started out picking it up, and then each book they got closer and closer, and they got to be better friends and better friends, and they learned from each other. And now what I feel is it's not a buddy book, because it truly is two separate protagonists that are linked together inexplicably with the teachings and their personalities and their feelings for each other. Care to comment?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, with these being, with like Suicide Bomb being the first in the the first book. That's where they meet for the first time. So, but like I said, the ladies bonded so quickly that when I get around to doing a second book, which I'm still, I have plans, but you know, it's getting there. You know, obviously I would like to see how their relationship has developed, you know, are they still friends after working together? And I think they would be, I think they would keep in touch and, would like to see how they continue to work together and how their friendship would grow. And so that's, it's one of those fun things with when you're doing your, when you're, it's like revisiting old friends, you know? It's kind of the same feeling for us as the writers as it is hopefully for the readers that come back for sequels. They're coming back to see old friends. It kind of feels that way when I sit down to write new stories with characters that I've already written with before.
Exactly. And that's exactly the way I feel about it. You develop a character and he actually takes over your writing experience for that particular book. We all know that. Yeah. I mean, those of writers, we all know the same, you know, we don't write the books. Our characters write the books. We just do the typing.
Exactly. I always tell people because I get questions a lot or do panels about writing and creating characters. And, you know, character is important and character informs the story. You can take a basic plot and drop three different characters in it and you in the exact same plot, you will get three different stories.
Exactly.
Because of how the characters will respond to things.
Yeah, I've always felt and I'm fairly certain from reading your Snow novel that when you develop a bad guy, an antagonist, as it were, you have to develop him all the way. You have to fully develop him. Otherwise, he's kind of lost in this story. And once you develop him, he also develops his own personality and how he's going to conduct himself throughout the novel.
Let me just say this and without spoiling anything in the Snow books. I had a plot for all six books. I knew what was going to happen in book six. And then in book three, something happened that totally screwed up books four, five, and six, plan-wise.
That's happened.
Because of something the antagonist did. But it worked so much better because I trusted the antagonist and go, nope, that's perfect. That's great for the story. Now I've got to figure out how we're going to tweak things again. And so, instead of forcing it into what my original plan was, following through how the characters act, not only did it make the story better, but it also made a character that was kind of important become really important. So I
tend to agree. I love writing characters that expand and contract with the story, especially the bad guys. I love bad guys. I just think writing bad guys is a true art form. I really do think that.
Yeah, and when you've got a great, I mean, when you've got a good bad guy, it makes your hero even better. You know, because they play off each other.
Absolutely. Yeah. A real good bad guy keeps you into the book. I mean, the protagonist, you already know who he is and you already kind of know where he's going to go. But the real good bad guy always throws wrenches into the cogs. And it's just like, oh, wow, I didn't see that coming.
Yeah. And I like to, as a writer, spend time with the villains, too. You know, there are chapters where we'll leave our heroes off here and we'll go see what the bad guy's up to. I like doing that, and probably the first time I remember seeing that done was reading Elmore Leonard, because he would go off and spend time with the bad guys.
Right, right.
And I like that, giving them a little bit of focus. Plus, it also, you know, it also teases a little thing and gives the reader a little insider knowledge at times, or, you know, it's fun to play with watching it from both sides.
Right, right. Totally.
Bobby, I wanted to ask you, you know, you mentioned that it took you a long time for this book to finally be completed for a number of reasons. But when you're working with developing, say, a particular scene or a particular narrative within the story, is it something that you think on maybe for days and days, and then you sit down to the computer and put it to words? Or does it happen when you're sitting there and you just, it just comes out at that time?
There are certain scenes that I do work through in my head. I get most of my best ideas 2 minutes after my head hits the pillow. Mm-hmm. So I will sometimes just lay there and work through scenes in my head. And, or if I'm driving or cutting the grass or any of those things where you're not actively, you know, using that part, the creative part of your brain, I'll just work through scenarios in my head and play out scenes. But most of it really for me happens when I sit down and start writing. That's when a lot of the surprises happen. Cause I'm not a hard outliner. I don't work well with an outline. I have a very loose outline where it's basically bullet points. I know this has to happen, this has to happen, blah, blah, blah. And I'll start at the first plot point, and I kind of take the characters and I go, okay, you need to go there. And then I see how they take me there. Mm-hmm. And so that allows things to happen that sometimes I don't know why they happen. In the case of Suicide Bomb, there's one chapter. We had been with the protagonist for a couple of chapters, and I was like, I need a break from these two for just a little bit to do something else, but I didn't know what to do. Mm-hmm. So I just started writing, and I wrote this chapter that introduced a new character, showed something happening, and I was like, I have no idea really how this guy fits, but I know he's important to the story. But if it doesn't work, I can always just, you know, yank this chapter out. 3 chapters later, I figured out why this guy was important to the story, and it made him a more important character. And so then I went back and just, you know, fudged a few things to make it all work. And so sometimes I have to trust the unconscious side of my brain, because it seems like it and my characters know more than I do most of the time.
It mm-hmm. seems to me that your conscious brain is about 3 steps behind your subconscious brain that's creating this stuff, and then you have to, so you kind of put it down and you write it, and then you go, well, I don't understand where this is going to go, and all of a sudden it comes to you because your brain in the background had already put it together.
Yeah, I've had that happen before where I'll get to near the end of something and I realize there's a twist that happens, or something comes out of seemingly left field, and I go, ooh, I should go set that up, and then I go back and reread and the clues are already there.
Wow.
But I was just not consciously, I was not aware I was putting them in there. But you're right, the subconsciously, the part where the characters come from, they knew what they were doing.
It's kind of like mystical, the way that the stories evolve. I mean, Jim's talked about so many of the different writers we've spoken to, is that they, you know, even talking about how the characters write themselves, they create mm-hmm. the story.
That's right.
And that's just for me, not being a writer, it's pretty bizarre.
Yeah, I've done a lot of work too. Over the years I've done a lot of like short stories for anthologies. And sometimes I remember there was one I sat down to write, and I was like, I have no idea what to write this character doing. Every idea I had just seemed really cliche or really, you know, just didn't work. So I was like, but I've got to get this story written. So I was like, I tell you what, I'll start with a new character. I'll create a guy here real quick, bare bones kind of guy. He's taking a walk through the city in the middle of the night. And I follow this guy writing what I know about him as it comes to me. And then he gets into a situation that brings the character, the book's character into. And suddenly you get this great story that came out of just following this new character I created, walking down the street and seeing what kind of trouble he could get into. So yeah, it's weird how it works sometimes.
Well, character
development. And sometimes it makes me look smarter than I am.
Well, character development is something we talked about the other night, and it fascinates me because I love creating new people, and I oftentimes think of someone that I know, like Russ. I've made you into 4 different people.
I felt a little depleted.
Well, your latest incarnation was the Texas Ranger that hooked up with Jefferson and Jefferson's Chance, Caleb mm-hmm. Springfield.
Right.
Yeah, and but you have been in several different novels as different characters because of the way your behavior and the way you act and your demeanor, and it's something that just sticks to you and it goes into a character, and sometimes you aren't even aware that you're doing it, and Bobby, I think that's probably true for you as well.
Yeah, I like to give personalities sometimes with people I know. I first learned the word I first learned this trick. My first novel, Evil Ways, I was writing it, and I was taking a night writing class at the University of Georgia, one of those non-credit classes.
Yeah,
and part of what we did in this class was reading in front of the group and getting the instant feedback. And I was reading the chapter that I had written on where the two brothers run into each other for the first time in years. And I remember the feedback I got from the group was they don't feel like brothers. That, you know, I know they're brothers because you tell us they're brothers, but they don't feel like brothers. And so I back home after the class for like the next week, I was thinking about that. And then I was like, wait a minute. I have a brother. How about my brother and I act around each other? And so what I did was I ended up giving my personality to one of the characters and my brother's personality to the other.
Right.
And rewrote it as if he and I hadn't seen each other in years. How would we interact? And I got a much more positive response because they felt real. And you know what? That kind of stuck with me. Yeah.
That's interesting because in the book Suicide Bomb, and I'm going to pull this out without giving away any of the plot, but one of the characters is a writer, and he has been very successful. And when he started out, I think his second book that he in fact, I was going to talk to you about it later with Writer's Block, but he was having a problem putting the story together. And the reason was that his first book he had written, and it was taken, a lot of it was taken from parts of his own life. The second book, he made everything up, and nobody was really too good with it. Nobody was, you know, even the publisher didn't like it. So he went back because people had said it doesn't feel real. So he went back and explored some real situations that happened in his life, put those into the book, and it added reality to it. And then everybody said, oh, this is awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. That's one of those. You know, there's a little bit of us that goes into every book, and that, you know, they say, write what you know, right?
Yeah.
Oh, write who you know.
That's why I don't write.
Yeah. Hey, guys, I'm going to take a real, real, real quick break here. And Russ, this is for you. And back in the wilds of Grand Avenue in Fillmore, California, is a little ranch, 20 acres on the banks of the beautiful Sespe River. And it's called All Dogs Rule, Sleepover, and whatever. What is it, Russ?
It's Day Camp and Sleepover.
Day Camp and Sleepover. So let's listen to a little bit about All Dogs Rule, Day Camp and Sleepover. You're leaving on vacation. Your tickets have been purchased and your hotel reservations are confirmed. Well, mail delivery has been suspended, but what about the dog? All Dogs Rule Day Camp and Sleepovers. It's a place your dog wants to be when they can't be with you. All Dogs Rule provides your best four-legged buddy a place to run and play outside amongst orange trees and grass and a beautiful country-like setting. Your dog gets to be a dog. So All Dogs Rule offers additional services, including individualized playtime, personal walks, swimming sessions in the creek, and additional training. So visit All Dogs Rule on the web at alldogsrule.com or give them a call 805-524-1100. And when your pup returns home with that smile on his face, well, he leaves yourself wondering whose vacation was better, yours or the dog's. All Dogs Rule 805-524-1100. Give them a call. And we are back. It is now 7:28. We are on the air with Mr. Bobby Nash, and Russ Avison, and we're talking about Bobby's writing and of course the many genres he writes in. We happen to be talking about suspense and crime at the moment, but Russ, I have to tell you that I really enjoy doing that commercial for you.
You know, like I said, the first time when you sent me the copy to listen to, I said, it made me want to do a jig.
That's right, because it's Irish.
Yeah,
it's an Irish thing. Okay, so Bobby, we're talking about character development, and of course, that's something that's near and dear to my heart. And of course, it apparently it's near and dear to your heart too, because you write some phenomenal characters.
Oh, thank you.
Very welcome. And your craft, is like, it's something that is in your heart, and you can tell. You can tell when you read a sentence written by a writer that their craft is in their system, in their soul, and it's in their heart, and their sentences just tell you that. We've read books where the writer wrote the book. It was okay. It's a great book, but their heart isn't in it. And your heart seems to be in just about everything you write. So kudos.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. I try not to like work on things that I'm not interested in.
Mm-hmm.
I try not, sometimes, people try to write to follow trends, and someone gave me early advice. I said, yeah, don't do that. Cause with your luck, you'll follow a trend that you hate. You'll do it, you'll get popular, and you'll be writing this thing you hate for the rest of your life.
You know, isn't that the truth? I mean, look at some of these romance writers. It's the same book. They just changed the name of the protagonist. You know, of course, the cover guy is always the same. But, but I think dialogue, and as far as your craft goes, character development is huge. Dialogue, I think, is right up there, if not surpasses character development, because that is so important to a flow of a book, is mm-hmm. the dialogue. If it's not realistic, people won't read it.
One of the earliest tricks I learned, and I don't for the life of me remember if someone told me this or it was something I figured out on my own, but when you're reading a novel, there's a lot of information about what they're doing, some dialogue, right. Little information. And I learned pretty early on that sometimes I will go in and just write the conversation uh-huh. and then go back and fill in the details of what they're doing. And
sure.
Because in my head, I'm just seeing the characters talk back and forth to each other. And so sometimes just getting the dialogue down makes it work and flow so much better.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, but the dialogue also has to match the character.
True.
And not everybody speaks the Queen's English, as we all know.
Right.
So,
right. And
the colloquialisms and the faux pas and everything else that you have to throw into dialogue are there for a reason. And when the reader's reading it, there eventually becomes a rhythm to it. I believe that. I don't know if you do or not, but I think there's a rhythm to it, and they pick up that rhythm very quickly. And they they go with, and now they know how that character talks. Now let's see how this character talks. And if you're a good writer, you can separate them out.
And you can get a lot of personality
absolutely.
In dialogue. You can also get a lot about, as writers, one of the big things we all try to avoid is the big info dump. Those are not fun to write. They're not fun to read.
No.
But you can get a lot of that same information across in a more interesting way through dialogue in little bits and pieces, not someone just standing there giving a big, here's the info dump speech, but you can work it in and get it in bite-sized pieces.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the reader gets more out of it that way anyway.
Right, right.
Than if you're trying to give them 12 paragraphs at one time.
Oh, and I think a lot of dialogue takes place almost underneath the speaker's breath.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh crap, and we have to, would you mind if I give you an example?
Please.
There's a scene in a book that I'm writing right now where the bad guys are, they've stopped at a place that runs side of a mountain, and nobody really knows where they are except these two guys, and they're not saying. And the bad guy's name is Johnny Beats. And so this is how the dialogue goes. Beats turned in his saddle and waved forward Tuco Salazar. "Maybe Tuco can help y'all remember," said Beats, turning his horse back to the rest of the outlaws. "Maybe Tuco can help y'all remember," parodied Whitey as they watched the vicious Mexican approach on his spotted Mustang pony. "Fuck him, Lenny. He ain't nothing without them yahoos with him." And so that kind of gives you an idea of who these guys are.
Mm-hmm. Right, because personality. There's a lot of personality in that. Yeah, and there's things you can do. There's things you can do with dialogue to get across those, not only the feelings and the information, right, but character traits. You know,
exactly.
This character could stutter when he's pushed. This character cusses a lot. This character never cusses. You know, so there's a lot you can get across about who these people are by how they talk and how sometimes they don't talk.
Right.
You know,
which has always been kind of a bone for me, is that, you know, some characters, you're absolutely right, do cuss a lot. And that's part of their deal with their being a character that they are.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you've ever had anybody tell you, well, there's a lot of profanity in your book. Yeah, but only one guy.
Yeah.
Only one guy.
It's like, you know, I use it. Let's put it this way. Cuss words, you know, they're words like anything else.
Right.
They can be powerful, and sometimes your scene requires you to use up, you know, to say fuck, you know, because that's
exactly,
there's power in that in that word.
Right.
So if you use it and use it smartly and know when to use it, you can get more across than if you're dropping them in there all the time. So those are things that we juggle, and we do think about where these words go and how you get things in the, you know, where you put them, because when you put them is just as important too. You know, do we want to know this character has this trait early in the book or late in the book? You know,
And is it, you know, like, I had a character that used a lot of profanity. His name was Jolly Goodman. And everybody knew at that point it was Jollyisms. That's the way he talked. That was just going to be the way he talked, period. So Everybody who read a book knew that Jolly was going to be in the book. There was going to be a lot of profanity. But only on his side.
Right. But that also, you knew it was him when he talked, you know.
Sure.
So that also, as a writer too, because you've established that pattern, that also means you're not filling your book up with he said or Jolly said or Jolly, you know.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
So you can have the dialogue flow a little better, which always works. You
know? Right. Exactly. Let me ask you the question. That's the question we ask every writer that ever comes on this show. Have you ever had writer's block? And if you have, how did you get out of it?
I don't think I've ever had writer's block to where I don't know what needs to be done, or I don't know. I can't. There's never a point where, oh, God, I just can't make it. I can't make words. I've never had that. What I have had is, my God, I don't feel like doing this today.
I've been there.
Every day,
you know, as much as I love what I do, it is my job.
Right.
And like any other job that I've ever had, there are days where my body just rebels against doing it at all.
Oh, your brain.
And yeah, exactly. And plus, you know, the hardest part for me, as it is for so many other writers that I've talked to over the years, is the actual sitting down and getting started. Once you get started, you're usually good, because it's an old joke I've heard that I'm reminded of when I say that. It's like, I'm a writer, and today I'm going to write, but first.
Yeah, but
yeah,
first.
And fill in the blank.
Biggest word in the English language, but.
Yeah, so, because, you know, as a writer, you know, the first thing we decided to do is, I'm going to write today. Let me clean the office first.
That's for sure. Yeah. That's for sure. What are you working on right now?
Well, I just finished up the fifth book in the Snow series called Snow Star. It is currently in edits, so I should get that back in a day or two to give it the final polish. But right now I'm working on two projects. I always work on multiple projects because sometimes I bounce. Sometimes I'll write a chapter and I get to the end of the chapter and go, okay, I'm done with this for the day, but I still want to work, so I'll jump over to the other project. So right now I'm doing two projects. One of them I'm adapting some short stories that I wrote into a full cast audio drama for a publisher.
Wow. Okay.
And I finished the first one today, and I'm working on the second one now. But I'm also working on the second book in a 4-book series that I'm doing for Falstaff Books called Hunter Houston Horror Hunter. Which is a comedy horror. Yeah.
The title's good.
It's a spinoff of a book that they do called Bubba the Monster Hunter. And in that book, there's this big country guy named Bubba and his team. They fight monsters in the South. In one of their books, they disappear. And in the book, they're off having an adventure in fairyland.
Mm-hmm.
But to the people here, they're just gone. And so everybody assumes they're missing, presumed dead. And so Houston, my guy, is the number two monster hunter in the South. And he's quite happy with being number two because you don't have to work so hard at being number two. Bubba takes care of the big stuff. Houston takes care of the little stuff. Well, now Houston has to step up. And he's really not happy about it at all, but they're a lot of fun. They're very very humorous. It's like mixing humor and horror, which is a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you, because I ask a lot of writers this question. Do you edit as you go, or do you rely on another editor to clean your work up?
A little of both. When I go through, I will, like, whatever I write today, when I start tomorrow, I'll reread what I wrote today.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll kind of give it, sometimes I start polishing it while I'm there. But before it goes to someone else to edit, I try to get it as close as possible,
mm-hmm.
you know, and get it as polished as possible so that when it goes off to the editor, there's a lot less work on their end to do.
Mm-hmm. Do you expect your editors to edit you on content or mechanics only?
It depends. I mean, usually they do both. Depending on who you're working with, doing work for publishers, you know, they kind of have their, mm-hmm. their formatting or their way of doing things. Mm-hmm. And so there is a lot of stuff that way. A lot of times it just depends on the editor you get. You know, some editors are just like, you know, I'm just here to make sure your story looks good. And then others are like, let me give you some notes or give you ideas or, you know, why don't you try it this way? So it just depends on who you're working with and for. With the Snow books, because I publish those under my imprint myself, I guess I am the final say because I am the publisher too. Mm-hmm. It's more of catching the grammar, but I never turn away. If the editor reads something and goes, this doesn't make any sense to me. Mm-hmm. I still take that seriously, because if one person reads it and goes, that's confusing, it's probably going to confuse someone else.
Exactly.
So I will. Yeah.
My wife, or actually the person who booked you on this show, Jerry, she edits everything that I write, and she is tough. She is tough, and she will blue line, red line. I mean, I get a piece of the manuscript back, and it's got marked all up. Well,
like a redacted file.
I know it's like, but I expect that. And I kind of ask for that, because if it's not making sense to her, you're right. It's not making sense to the person who ultimately is going to read it.
Right.
So,
right. Cause I, I, I would like to think everything I write is gold, but I know better. Because I'm too close to it sometimes too, because my brain, even if I read it, my brain fills in the missing parts if I've messed something up. So having an objective person, you know, looking over it and doing those edits does help.
Right. It does. And let's going to break right there. We're going to do one final commercial for Creative Edge. They are a publicity company, and we'll be right back with you. So go away, and we will return right after this word from Creative Edge.
Okay, you've written a book. Now what are you going to do? Well, why don't you give Creative Edge Publicity a try? You see, when Creative Edge Publicity was founded in 2016, they immediately showed they weren't the same as other publicity firms. Like an old pair of shoes or an old friend, they work closely with their individual clients' needs and goals and push harder to get them noticed. Creative Edge believes that communication is an important part of the partnership, and that model is how they have built their success. They collaborate and they work with local, national, and international media outlets and organizations to meet their clients' goals. So Creative Edge, it's your brand, your future. Mickey Mickelson Publicists, and you can find them at www.creative-edge.services. Winter companions, the
and believe me, he is my publicist, and you could do a lot worse than Mickey Mickelson and Creative Edge. So if you're looking for a publicist, give him a holler. So, Mr. Bobby, where are you going from here?
There's nowhere else to go higher than this.
Of course,
this is the pinnacle of every writer's career.
That's right. The pinnacle is being on the writer's block, of course. Yes. But
that's right. I'm retiring. I'm retiring right after this show.
Everybody's got visions of where they want to be. Where do you want to be in 5 years from now?
You know, one of my goals, and it's certainly not the next goal. There are goals between it. But one of my goals is to have the term New York Times best-selling author in front of my name at least once.
We know a lot of them. A lot of them have been on the show.
So that is a goal. Uh-huh. I would also like to see how a production team would turn one of my books into a movie or TV. Mm-hmm. I think that would be interesting. Mm-hmm. I would love it if, you know, more people were reading my books. I have a small audience, but it's a small audience that keeps coming back, which I appreciate greatly. But mm-hmm. I'm constantly working on new ways to promote the books, get the word out, hopefully find new audiences, doing mm-hmm. sales, things like that. Like this week we're doing 99 cents. Oh, all the snow books are 99 cents this week. Through Saturday, so
Are they audiobooks?
E-books are 99. The e-books are 99 cents. We do have audiobooks of all of them. Yeah. Yes, I work with a fantastic narrator on the snow audiobooks named Stuart Goffey, who just does a fantastic job bringing mm-hmm. snow and his friends to life that are just fantastic.
Bobby, I want to ask you. I want to ask you, though, in reading Suicide Bomb, okay, this is a book that I could see picking up off a shelf somewhere in a bookstore and buying it and reading it because it was very enjoyable. There are authors that we have talked to that don't write with this kind of style that doesn't seem to be mainstream. Your book seems to be mainstream. So what is it that differentiates your books from being as successful as, any one of the, as you said, you want to have New York Times bestseller, mm-hmm. best-selling author in front of your name. So what sort of things are going to change that? Because I think you have a book there. I mean, personally, I think you have a book that could qualify for that. So it seems to be maybe the marketing or, I mean, I don't know. I'm asking this question because I have no idea.
Part of since I self-published it, Suicide Bomb, through my Ben Books indie press, that pretty much right there means it will never be in Barnes & Noble. So it won't be where you walk into the grocery store and it's in their book section. It's not going to ever be in any of those places. So distribution helps because books are easier to find.
Right.
And being a small press, I don't have that. Now, you can go into any Barnes & Noble and say, I want Suicide Bomb, and they'll order it for you.
Sure.
But you're not gonna find it on the bookshelf.
Right.
So I have to, because with that, knowing that, I have to, almost everything I do is it feels like I'm still selling them one at a time, you know? I'm out there trying to reach people. I do think a lot of conventions or signing events, library shows. I do a lot of stuff like that. Although this year I've done very little. I had a lot of events this month and next month that have already been canceled, you know, due to the Corona stuff. But it's unavoidable, but hey, I have extra writing time. So, it's working out in the end.
I would think that maybe it could be good for you from the standpoint that people have a lot of reading time now.
Yeah, well, that was part of the reason we put the Snow books on ebooks for 99 cents. And I'm thinking about doing a couple of my other novels, maybe next week when that sale ends, putting them on sale to just get them out there. But I do, like I said, I do as many different things as I can to reach people. I do interviews with websites and bloggers. I do podcasts. I come on shows like yours. Mm-hmm. Just anything, whatever I can do to reach new people, and let them know the books are there, and hopefully, they'll check them out and like them.
Well, you're going out live right now.
Mm-hmm.
You are live on the air. So, I mean, and then everything you're saying is going out to about 250,000, and by the time it goes into a podcast, it'll be well over 650,000 listeners that will hear what you have to say tonight.
Now, if I could sell 650,000 books, I would be really close to that New York Times bestselling.
Well, and you know what? We're out of time, so we're gonna have to cut this short. But Bobby, I really, truly appreciate you showing up and spending this hour with us tonight. It was a hoot having you, and you're such a great guest. So
thank you for having me.
Come back and visit us, would you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'd love to.
We'd love to have you back. And, can you tell our listeners where they can find you on the web?
Certainly. I have a website, bobbynash.com. My indie press, I mentioned Ben Books, has a website, which is ben-books.com.
Okay.
And the Snow Books have their own website, which is abrahamsnow.com. You can find me on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, MeWe, LinkedIn. If there's a social media, I'm probably on it. I haven't really done the video ones like the TikTok or the
right.
I forget the other one's called, but yeah, I haven't done really those too much, but I'm on most social medias. There's links all over bobbynash.com. Feel free to say hello.
Okay. Well, again, thank you so much for spending this hour, and I know it's late where you are, and so bless you for spending the time with us. Of course, with the lockdown of coronavirus, I know you're not going anywhere. So,
yeah. Well, fortunately for me, I'm really a night owl anyway. So this is I'm usually writing at this time. So it's
Well, all right. We hate to pull you away from that, but again, thank you for joining us, and it's Mr. Mr. Bobby Nash, if you're looking for him, look him up on the web. The guy is phenomenal. He's got some great books, and don't miss out on them if you are any one of his genre fans, which are many.
So, hey, Bobby, I want to say how much I enjoyed your book again. It really was a page turner. As I said, I read it in one day, and it kept my interest all the way through.
There you go.
Well, thank you. Thank you. That means a lot. Thank you.
Thanks again, Bobby. And this podcast will be available about 5 minutes after the show is over with. I'll put up something on the web the next couple of days. People can come in and they can click in and they can listen to this podcast. So, again, thank you so much.
Awesome. Thank you.
Have a good night, Bobby.
Have a good night.
Thanks, guys.
And next week, we have on the Writer's Block, which will be the first week in April, we have Erin Pringle, who is returning. Her last visit with us was in March 8th of 2018. She's a Spokaneite, so she's right in the middle of all the Washington stuff. I'm sure that's going to be interesting to talk to her about. But she's got a new book out, and we're looking forward to talking to her again. And Russ, it's always a pleasure.
It is, isn't it?
It is. It truly is. And you know, I just love you guys and you and your wife, Karen. And Bella says hi, you know, because she loves her Uncle Russ more than anything in the world.
Well, make sure you give her a belly rub for me.
I will. Well, actually, we're waiting for you to do that. We should be calling this Bella Radio.
No. There you go.
Or Golden Retriever Broadcasting. There you go. Anyway, for Russ and myself, Jim Christina, and, of course, Bobby Jean Bell, who is not with us tonight, and the Writer's Block and LA Talk Radio, we are out of here.